residency requirements that so many of these opportunities require. So we're really grateful for all the people that have supported us.
I want to thank you for being with us and congratulate you on Unseen, which just premiered on POV. You can now watch it online. We're going to do part two at democracynow.org. Unseen. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
I'm Al McFarland. Welcome to The Conversation with Al McFarland. I'm glad to be here and glad to have you along as well. And kudos always to our colleagues at KFAI. What a powerful, powerful station. What a powerful, powerful message delivered every day by Amy Goodman, Democracy Now. We're pleased to be following them and riding their coattails into the consciousness of the nation and of the world. We thank you for listening to The Conversation with Al McFarland here on KFAI FM 90.3, but also around the world on KFAI.org. And we also thank you if you're connecting with us on any of our social media platforms. We are streaming live in our partnership with the Black Press of America, the National Newspaper Publishers Association, at YouTube Black Press USA, and streaming live from the Insight News YouTube channel, YouTube Insight News MN. If you are there or maybe checking us out on Twitter or Facebook or LinkedIn, jump over to the YouTube Insight News channel and become a subscriber. We're north of 600, heading to 700. Our goal short term is 1,000, and then multiples thereafter. So each time you hear and you decide that you should be a part of this conversation ongoing, take the step, subscribe, share, and like. And our research says that about maybe 85% of the people that are listening on a given day listen, enjoy, but they have not subscribed. So we're trying to motivate you to take the extra step, subscribe, and support this conversation, this work. Today, as always, a great program, great information. We begin with my colleague and my friend, the inimitable Coach Leah, Coach Leah Denley. Leah, how you doing?
I don't hear you. Terrific for Tuesday.
There we go.
Looks like an alliteration.
All right. What's on your mind?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
So for this Tuesday, I wanted to start off the show talking about our second annual Tall Girls United Wellness, Wealth, and Winning Conference that's coming up very, very soon, actually. During the Women's Final Four, we have our conference every year alongside the Women's Final Four and the WBCA, the Women's Basketball Coaches Association Conference. And so we're super excited about our lineup this year. We've got WNBA legends that will be headlining and being in the spotlight during our panel discussion this year. And we've actually changed our Ultimate Brunch to a Ultimate Brunch and Forum. So we'll have breakout sessions, our panelists who are subject matter experts. They include Samika Randall, who will be talking about recovering from injury and how to do that and to have the mindset for that. We will have Vicki Hall, who a WNBA legend who played for the Cleveland Rockers, and she is a licensed financial advisor. And her goal is not just financial literacy, but just truly understanding the goal setting behind understanding, which I think is so dope and amazing. So that's going to be fun. Her insight is going to be fun. And then the Twin Cities' own Minneapolis Northside's own Tracy Henderson Edwards, will be on the panel talking about a champion mindset. And I will tell you what, if she doesn't know how to be a champion, I don't know who does. And so I'm so excited for that. It's just going to be a reunion of sorts. I told Tracy, do not make me cry, girl. Please do not make me cry. Because, you know, you think about, I've known Tracy for, you know, forever. Mm-hmm. And watched her grow and seen her journey. And then when you just look at her as, look at her now, this successful and just inspiring young woman that has, adult children of her own right now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, whoa. But yeah, so that's going to be really, really fun. So along with our ultimate brunch and forum, we start out with a coaches kind of a welcome reception on that Thursday night, April 4th. Again, Friday is the brunch. On that Saturday, we have what we're calling the tip-off fashion show. And I will get more into detail with that next week, because okay. I hope you have a very special guest join us to talk about that. And then on Sunday, we do a praise and worship service with the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, supporting them. And then we end everything, what we like to call inspiration and affirmations, a chance to do some reflections and just culminate the whole weekend with some, you know, action stuff. You just don't want to go to a conference and mm-hmm. not have it inspire you to actually do something. And so we're super duper excited about that. So I just wanted to share that with you. Again, I want to thank
all happening in Cleveland, right?
It's all in Cleveland, Ohio, alongside the Women's Final Four that will be there. Mm-hmm. And then speaking of that, did anybody have a chance to watch the selection shows on yesterday for the men? Oh, I'm sorry, on Sunday for the men and the women? This year's tournament is going to be phenomenal. I mean, it's just on both the men's and the women's side. If you have a chance to watch any of the games, I don't want you to think that the first few rounds will be boring at best and the teams will be getting blown out, because we have seen that even the top seeds have fallen. So you do not want to miss any game. Everybody this year is ready to play. And so that's just going to be so, so much fun and very exciting. And I'm sure the selection committee is going to be scratching their heads going, hey, how did we miss this? How did we get seated here? You know, and so that's going to be super, super exciting.
Well, two quick notes. One, about the Big Ten tournament converging on downtown Minneapolis. Was there a noticeable boost in the business downtown? What's the story?
So I haven't heard any feedback yet. And so I would love for folks to call in to KFAI or to write us at Insight News and let us know what your thoughts were about that, because we had both the men's and the women's Big Ten tournament in the Twin Cities in downtown at Target Center. And I would love to know how impactful that was. Just watching the games, I just, again, everybody has come to play, and there's no clear winner on either the men's or the women's side. And it started at those conference tournaments. And so just a quick note, I want to pivot and just talk about if anybody was able to see the number one ranked University of Houston Cougars fall terribly in the championship game. You know, one of their star players was left out of the game. And my whole thought was, does one player really make that big of an impact that they would? They lost terribly by more than 20 points, if I'm not mistaken. And that was the championship game for the Big 12. And so that's, you're like, what? What just happened? So, but anyway, so that's something to think about.
So you're inviting people to predict the winner. Talk about that real quick.
We are asking you to predict the winner. And you can email us at coachleah@insightnews.com. And just tell me what your prediction is. And you'll need to put, I forgot what I put in my subject line. I'll post it. I'll post it later. I'll put that in the subject line that you're making a prediction, and then you can, I'll put it in that, this week's column as well.
Sure.
But you want to make sure that you put a prediction in, let us know who you think is going to win on the men's or the women's side. Now, the fun part about this particular opportunity is you can make as many predictions as you'd like. Mm-hmm. Okay. However, whoever since the correct prediction first, will win a gift certificate, and then everybody else will receive prizes as well. So in the subject line, you'll want to put NCAA Final Four 2024. I knew I made it some type of another rhyming thing.
There you go.
NCAA Final Four 2024.
Coach Leah, thank you so much. Always good to see you. You inspire us every week and every day. Read Coach Leah's column in Insight News and follow her on social media. Coach, we'll see you next week.
All right. See you guys. Bye-bye now.
Take care. Bye-bye. I'm Al McFarland. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland. I've got a great program. A brief visit here with one of my other all-time best friends, and that's Michael Wright. Michael Wright is the leader, the visionary, the guru behind the Golden Time movement in St. Paul on Selby Avenue, but also the spirit behind the Selby Jazz Festival. And now he's going to replicate that. So it's not a once a summer. He's trying to bring in a kind of winter spring complement to that. Michael, good afternoon. Good. How you doing, man?
Good, Al. Good to be here with you. I appreciate your time.
We'll take a minute, if you would, just to talk about what's going to be happening in the area of jazz in St. Paul at the depot, the Union Station downtown, right?
Yeah, we retire from Golden Time, but it's been 5 months, a little over 5 months, and I can't let grass grow underneath my feet, Al. Uh-huh. Something came to mind. You know, we've always thought about expanding the opportunity for prosperity of our vendors that we've assembled over the years with the Selby Avenue Jazz Fest. And now that place has become St. Paul's historic Union Depot. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful facility, Al. And we're forging straight ahead. You know, one of the things is that they say that Rome wasn't built in a day. The Selby Avenue Jazz Fest wasn't built in a day. And so the Capital City Village Bazaar extravaganza is going to take a little time to get some momentum going. People got to find their way and get familiar with it and how it works. So it's going to take a little time. So it's a little bit short of what we expected, but hey, we're going to forge straight ahead and make it a great event.
Date and time?
The date is Saturday, April 6th. It opens up to the public from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And so we're looking for some of our food vendors, being Logan's Catfish is always a main staple, Egg Roll Queen, West Indies Soul, A Taste of New Orleans, and a few others. And we have some vendors coming out, and arts and crafters is what we push. One thing I noticed, Al, is in looking and doing my research, throughout the country is only just a tad over 9% of Black vendors throughout the country. So what I like to do is definitely build more awareness, mm-hmm. A database, so people can basically tune in and find where events are going to be located, especially in the Twin Cities.
Awesome. Michael, I'll have you back again just to give an update next week, okay?
Sounds good, Al. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, my friend. Okay. I'm Al McFarland. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland. And got a great program, more great guests, a big event coming up, not event, but a big, I don't know how to describe it, improvement, an expansion of opportunity for North Minneapolis and for the region is coming up. It's called the Upper Harbor Terminal Project. And I've got some people here with me today to give you an update and to promote a public meeting coming up in a few days as well. But before I bring on James Trice, who's coordinating this show with me today, I wanted to remind those who are listening or on our social media platforms, drop us a note. Let us know give us your name and where you are joining us from. Drop a note in the comment section. We want to hear from you. If you have questions, put them there. And if there's something that we're doing that really hits you personally, you want to be on the call, we can make that happen as well. Well, James Trice heads the Public Policy Project and has worked with me over the years to make sure that people get information in Insight News and across the social media platforms that we have to talk about the Upper Harbor. James is CEO of the Public Policy Project and contributes a column from time to time in Insight News as well. Brother James, how you doing, man?
Beautiful, Brother Al. Thank you so much for allowing me to be with you today, be in space with you. and thank you for this opportunity to come and share this wonderful opportunity for North Minneapolis to engage in, and hopefully, you know, economic development and economic increase, wealth building, opportunity for North Minneapolis residents, and a place to play, live, and enjoy that is going to take place right in their neighborhood. So,
who's with you here today? People that I know, they're friends of mine, but I'm going to let you do the honors of introducing and bringing the conversation forward.
Well, first, I would be remiss if I didn't first introduce Bill English, who we all know, community leader for a long, long time in North Minneapolis, have done some great work, not just in North Minneapolis, but I think throughout the state of Minnesota,
Bill's a national treasure.
You're absolutely right. Thank you for that correction. He has just been a stalwart and a great, great leader and still active in our community. He has not slowed down. Matter of fact, I think he's gained energy. So we have Mr. English with us, who is and I'll let him say more about himself, but he was a former Collaborative Planning Committee member. The Collaborative Planning Committee, or CPC in short, was a committee put together by the city of Minneapolis to help direct the city on what should happen at the Upper Harbor development that we're going to be talking about today. And it culminated into a coordinated plan that was passed by the city council in November 2021 for what is going to take place at this Upper Harbor development. He was a part of that work. I think 2 years they met every single month to try to put this thing together. So we have him on the call with us. We also have Hillary Holmes, who's a senior project coordinator for the city of Minneapolis, CPED, we call it Community Planning Economic Development. And the city of Minneapolis actually owns this land, but they CPED is managing it. And they are the, you know, helping to direct what's going to take place at the development. And then finally, we have Brandon Champo. He's the senior vice president, commercial development of the and marketing at the United Properties. And United Properties is the prime developer for this development at the Upper Harbor Terminal. We called it Upper Harbor Terminal. Now it's Upper Harbor Development. It was a terminal. We'll talk about that in a second. But he's the prime developer on the site. And he'll be leading all of the construction and all of that, whatever's going to take place there. So Brandon Champo is with us as well.
Well, James, invite people to next week's event, first of all. Let's let people know there's a public policy opportunity, and it's one of several. As the project's been kind of quiet for the past several months in terms of public policy engagement, but now it's ramping up again. So over the course of this interview, several times, let's remind people and invite people to show up.
Yes, so I want to invite people to attend a community meeting next Tuesday, so a week from today, 5:30 to 7:30 at the UROC Urban Research and Engagement Center, 200 Plymouth Avenue in North Minneapolis, to really hear the update from the developer. Brandon Champo, his team at United Properties, and the development team are going to talk about some proposed updates to what's going to happen and what was already agreed upon in the coordinated plan. There are going to be some small adjustments, and they felt that it was necessary to bring it back to this collaborative planning committee, which Mr. English sits on, but also that the community needs to hear about what is going to take place there. The community has been through many iterations of this engagement, have heard many concepts, various proposals, and sat in meetings for hours and hours on end to really talk about what should happen at this development to make sure it benefits North Minneapolis residents. And there's some proposed changes that United Property wants to make, but they felt it was necessary to alert the community about these changes. So next Tuesday, 5:30 to 7:30, you're right at 2001 Plymouth Avenue. Food will be served. Come and make your voice heard in this first, maybe a few, community update meeting.
Awesome. I'm Al McFarland. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland. Just talking with James Trice, who's with the Public Policy Project, and today has assembled players in the development for the Upper Harbor development in North Minneapolis. Before I bring in Hillary and Brandon, I want to go to my friend and my elder, Bill English. Bill, brother, always so good to see you. Batalla says she saw you a few days ago. Just as always, you know, just bright and focused and energetic. So I'm going to second the kudos that James Trice paid to you, just admiring the energy and the consistency and the longevity that you bring to public life. Give us a background on what's on your mind, Bill.
Well, thank you very much. But first of all, let me just say this. This is the team of people assembled here today are people that I have learned to trust. Mm-hmm. Now, you know me and public officials. I have been suspicious of them over the years, but I have come to trust the people involved in this project. First of all, I'm going to steal a little bit from Hillary and Brandon and say this is the largest redevelopment of an area in the city of Minneapolis in years. The largest, 47 acres mm-hmm. of redevelopment. While the benefits of by planning, we asked the city not to sell the land to the developer, which was the original plan, but to lease it to them so that the community would always have input into what occurred there. So over the next 30 to 50 years, the community will have a chance to have a voice in what goes there through its elected officials. And to their credit, United Properties accepted that. No one has told you today, but Brandon has a partner, one we all know well. Devin George is a partner with United Properties. He's an African-American who grew up in North Minneapolis, who's given back through his development efforts and other things that are going on we won't talk about today. So I want to give kudos to Brandon and United Properties. I also want to talk about Hillary and the role she's played. She's been a project leader. I've seen project leaders and project leaders come and go. She is really one of the best that I have seen. And I really mean that, and I don't blow smoke. Okay, I don't. But she's kept us together. She's informed us. She handles it well. She's taken the heat, because let me tell you, we had some heated meetings over those 2 or 3 years period of time. I never saw her once get upset. Hell, I got upset. I almost started a fight. So that's how intense some of the meetings were. But she held her cool and did her work very well. So I'm gonna say this to you, that I trust this project. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a lot of room. And I want to say this, while the benefits are targeted towards North Minneapolis, this is going to be a destination. You're talking about an 8,000 seat amphitheater, going to be run by First Avenue with a community advisory committee. You're talking about 700 units of housing, mixed use housing, a third low affordable, a third 50-60% of AMI, and a third market rate. That's what's going to keep this a sustainable project. So with that, we went through this planning, and now there's going to be a change that has been proposed in site. In other words, shifting a site. There are several sites that will be developed for housing and all. And everyone can go online and see this plan, and Hillary and Brandon will take it over from here and explain what this looks like, and maybe put up a map of the whole thing, whatever they need to, so people can see exactly in this broadcast what we're doing or whatever. But I trust what they say they're going to do, because they've never let me down yet. And I want to give them an opportunity to really get into why this meeting is important, why the public meeting is important. So it's an alert to get ready. So to get ready so your voice can be heard at the next public policy meeting. So with that, thank you, Al, for your kind comments. Well, you all are way too kind to this old man. Only thing I've ever done was stand on the shoulders of people who were around me and who bore me. I will owe, and until I leave this planet, I will continue to owe and try to give back.
Well, like you, Bill, we're all standing on your shoulders. So thank you for all you have done and all that you continue to do. I'm Al McFarland. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland. If you're listening on KFAI, you want to pitch your voice, you can do it online. Just go to YouTube, Insight News MN, and leave a comment. Let us know who you are, where you are. You can raise a question. Or, you know, shoot somebody down if you want to. That's all part of the game here. Thanks to Tananye, who's said she's watching the program. So this is great. And thanks to Michelle, who joins us from out east. If you are anywhere, we want to know where you are. We want to know where you are. Drop us a note in the comment section, and we want to shout you out. Well, with that, let me go to Hillary and then Brandon. Hillary, as the public partner, the public representative of the public's interest in this project, where are we and what is the change that we are going to be considering that both James and Bill English have alluded to?
Good afternoon, Al. It is afternoon now. Thanks, yes. Everybody. Thanks for having us on again, especially for me as a guest on behalf of the city. It's really great to be back on this show. It's been a few years. Mm-hmm. I know we've all spent a lot of time together on our computers over the last 3 or 4 years, and I can't believe we still are. But, you know, it's nice to have the option. It's a good way to get together. And I echo, again, the commitment from everybody that I can see on the screen right now and so many others to carrying this project forward and continuing to carry it forward. We have been quiet for the last couple of years, I would say, but that's not intentional. And it's also, it doesn't mean we haven't been busy. There has been a lot of work happening on the site to prepare the site. Mm-hmm. So we had mentioned the former use as a shipping terminal, barge shipping terminal. So that means there is infrastructure and other things to, you know, really clear. So to clear the property and to install new public infrastructure and utilities. So the city's public works department and contractors have been busy doing that work over the last couple of years. So we'll talk about some of those updates and share some photos at the community meeting. The city sold the park parcel to the park board last fall. And so that was a big milestone for the project. The park is supposed to start construction this spring. So that'll come also. And there was a big effort from XL Energy on moving these enormous overhead power lines inward or inland on the site so that they're out of the way of development so that the site can accommodate private development parcels. So that has been a big lift by a lot of people. And again, not always something you might be seeing, but we're excited to share those updates on the 26th. We're also going to use a good part of that meeting to share a proposal from United Properties and another interested party that they're working with. I'll leave it to Brandon to discuss. But that change, that if we move use from one parcel to another, yes, we decided would need to be an update to the coordinated plan. And we can talk about that process a little more in the future. But this is the first introduction of this proposal. And so that's the purpose of this meeting. So we want to share, again, all the work that's been happening on behalf of the city and the park board. And then we'll have a couple of other updates on some of the other developments. And then we'll spend some time introducing the proposal from United Properties and their potential partner. Anything else on your mind for today?
Let's start with that. We'll come back and let's bring Brandon Champo in. Brandon is the senior vice president at United Properties. He's the prime developer on the Upper Harbor Development Project. Brandon, good to see you again. How you doing? And welcome back to the conversation.
Yeah, thank you, Al. Good to see you. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been. You know, it's been quiet, it seemed. And I'm glad to see energy where there's, you know, more, again, public engagement to get people back on point. But, you know, what this makes me remember, Brandon, is that this is a long, long process. And too often in neighborhoods and community, we are accustomed to a problem emerging and a fix coming relatively quickly. And not often enough do we get the experience or get the training to look at the 20, 30, 40 year impact idea, a problem, or a challenge. And this is one of those special places and times where the community has a chance to be a long-term partner, voice, interest shaper in a significant development. So from your point of view as a developer, how long has this process been? This may be longer than you normally do in the commercial real estate arena. Talk about that if you would.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a project of this size. You know, I would say without the community process that we did would have been a decade plus. And we're actually going on 8 years now since we were selected as a lead developer back in 2016. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to your point, a project of this size is going to have a decades long impact on the community. And that was a major reason why we spent so much time in that community planning process, because there is a lot to just, you know, it wasn't just what we wanted to come in and do on day one, but it was how this will impact community in 10 years, 20 years. And a lot of the discussion that we had with Bill and the, you know, the members of the CPC was really around what those long-term impacts of the project would be. You know, and I mean, unintended consequences and other things that we had to spend a lot of time really thinking through. So yeah, this is longer than normal, no question, mm-hmm. but a project of this size would take a long time anyway.
How does a project of this size become worth doing for a company like United Properties? How do you weigh the opportunity and then pull the trigger on jumping in? At what risk, what cost, and what are the potential gains and profits you hope to derive from this significant investment?
It's a great question. I would say that, you know, the focus of this project, certainly from our perspective, changed over the 8 years. You know, I mean, we're a for-profit development company, and we're putting millions of dollars at risk into different projects all the time. And but we're also owned by the Polad family. The Polads are, you know, extremely invested in the metro area. They're very interested in making sure that the entire Twin Cities region thrives, you know, not just the individual projects that we're working on or the, you know, the other investments that they have. And so, I mean, there was a shift, you know, I would say in the first couple of years of the project where we stopped viewing it through the traditional lens that we would look at, you know, where it's like, all right, we're going to put X dollars in and we're going to hope to get X dollars out, and then we're going to be on our way. It became much more about community impact. And but a challenge in that is also balancing that with the fact that we still are putting millions of dollars at risk and have already invested millions of dollars in this process and are hoping to get a return on that investment. So it will definitely not be the same type of return we'd expect if I were building, you know, an industrial park out in the suburbs or something mm-hmm. like that. So that's not at all how we're viewing it anymore.
So it'll be different. And it sounds though that because of the large footprint of the Polad family and the organization in the development, this sort of made sense as a civic partnership, mm-hmm. Civic engagement opportunity, that while it still leads with, you know, the profit motive, it's not driven exclusively, singularly by money in, money out. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's been some unintended things from this process for us too. I mean, getting introduced to Devin and learning about his business, and, you know, that sparked conversations around affordable housing development at our company, and, you know, maybe some future projects with Devin beyond the Upper Harbor Terminal. And there's a legacy of this project in our company that will, you know, kind of play out in our company over a number of years, even after we're done with.
So where are we in the process right now? 7-8 years in, how's it look, and what are the new time markers for going forward?
Yeah, well, really the first 5 years were spent heavily on, you know, in the community. And between 2016 and 2021, we did over 150 community meetings. And, you know, since that time, since the coordinated plan was passed by the council in October of 2021, it really, to Hillary's point, like, it feels like we've been quiet, but it's really just been digging into like the nuts and bolts of real estate projects. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, there's been multiple weekly meetings with city and, you know, members of our team since that time on, you know, where property lines are and where roads are going to go and what the soil conditions are and how we're going to pay for environmental cleanups. And it's just like traditional real estate stuff mm-hmm. that, you know, we weren't tackling through that community process because we didn't know what the plan was yet. And so, so that's been, I would say, the bulk of what the last couple of years has really been about. But then on the same, you know, the same token, it's been just a lot of, I would say, fundraising and financing as well. There's, you know, obviously there's multiple elements of this project that are going to be very community focused. So they need alternative sources of funding. You know, we're seeking more than 12 sources of funding for the affordable housing development. So we've been working with Devin and his team on those applications. And that takes a long time as well. It's an incredibly competitive process to get those funds. And so we are, you know, we're just, it's been trying to kind of advance all of the, you know, advance all the infrastructure stuff while we're, you know, advancing our planning, while we're making sure the funding and financing kind of keeps pace. And you're just sort of pushing all these balls down the field at the same time and trying to keep them, as you know, moving at the same pace.
Let's give people an idea. You've mentioned Devin several times, and Bill English mentioned Devin George. Talk about his joining your project, what that means. If I remember correctly, when the project launched, it had included our friends over at Thor Construction. They were going to be development partners, but you know, Richard Copeland died. The organization took some different directions. And is the Devin George connection sort of the extension of that intent, or is it something different? Well, let me have you describe what it is you're doing with Devin George and what it means to you and to community.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say, you know, it partially came out of that, you know, the kind of the fallout of Thor. You know, going bankrupt during our time together, when, you know, we were 2 years into the project at that point. And there was a lot of concern by community after Thor was no longer a development partner on whether we would still have, you know, the North Minneapolis and in particular the Black communities, you know, interest at the forefront of what we were doing. And there was a lot of requests by us to seek out a different partner to bring to the table. And kind of coincidentally with that is when the affordable housing discussions were really starting to ramp up. And we don't, United Properties don't have a, you know, we do a ton of market rate and senior housing, but have very limited experience on the affordable side. And so we needed a partner on that had the expertise in that anyway. And through a few community members, we were introduced to Devin, I think in 2019, kind of late 2019 and early 2020, and really spent the first 6 months just kind of getting to know each other. And, you know, Devin was doing a lot of underwriting on us and on the project and wanted to make sure if he was going to join forces that, you know, that the interests were aligned. And so it's been now a couple of years, and our partnership will be focused on delivering the all the housing within the project.
I mentioned earlier, I wanted you to give us sort of a timeline update. You're 10 years in, just a second, Bill. You're 10 years in or 8 years in now. What are the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and when will people begin to see this project emerge into brick and mortar and green space and entertainment activity?
Yep. Well, you can go down there now and actually drive the roads. And it's, you know, it starts, when you're down there, you can actually start to feel it take shape a little bit. I know First Ave is not on the call today, but it's still their intent to break ground on the Community Performing Arts Center this summer. And I think that's about a year of construction. Hillary mentioned the park will, you know, hopefully be starting construction this year. And then, you know, really our goal has always been to get one affordable housing project going in 2024. We're still trying mm-hmm. our hardest. We're still seeking a couple final sources of funding. Mm-hmm. If I had a guess, it's probably more like a spring groundbreaking on the affordable housing. And then We are working with a group, Inner City Tennis, I'll just mention, that has a proposed plan for the community hub, the health and wellness community hub. And that'll be a big part of the discussion next week at the meeting, is to talk about their plan and what that would mean for the project and them as an anchor. And that, you know, I would say we'd be targeting probably a spring 25 groundbreaking for them as well, if we can, you know, achieve community support and city support.
All things falling in place, project completed 2027, 2028, 2029?
If I had a guess, I'd say probably closer to 2030, by the time the whole thing is done. Mm-hmm. We always anticipated that it would be 10 years, you know, from kind of when the plan was approved, and that was 2021. But, you know, there's still a lot of parcels to go yet. So there's 9 development parcels in the project.
Bill, you had a question or comment?
Yeah, I had a comment, more of a comment than a question. First of all, thanks to Hillary and Brandon for putting this project, this in perspective. I want to take it from I want to say something about the affordable housing aspect of it. The city of Minneapolis has committed its commitment to affordable housing more than any in the last 3 years, more than any other city that I know. The state has talked about affordable housing. Minnesota Housing Finance Agency is the one that makes those decisions where they go. All of a sudden, the Upper Harbor Terminal doesn't meet their criteria for this year's funding. I'm irate about it. And we should be as a community. They wanted to break ground to start this affordable housing. We know we got a housing affordable housing shortage. But we also want to see some market rate housing and some workforce development, workforce housing up there. We got projects where people could, starting at, that we won't even talk about today, a modular housing facility that build modular housing, manufacturing housing, ready to start, kick off in the next month or two. You'll hear more about that Devin is doing. And so while my city officials cannot say much negative about MFHA, and I don't blame them, but I know they did their work. I know Brandon knows they did their work. So why is MFHA now ready to stick us in the suburbs? Are they committed to gentrification? So all of a sudden, they're not funding any affordable housing, to my knowledge, in Minneapolis. Now, maybe I'm wrong. I don't think it was a single Minneapolis. And I talked to Senator Champion, and he was upset about it as well. So Commissioner Ho, in my mind, has got a lot of explanation to do. And we will be calling on her to come to some of these community meetings. At least I will. And hopefully my colleagues on the CPC, they all are saying the same things as Jane will tell you. What's up with that? So we will get them out. And we're going to raise some questions. Maybe not in this first public policy meeting, meeting next Tuesday. But future meetings, she needs to do some public statements about why the Upper Harbor Terminal does not deserve their support. Or is there somewhere, now you know I'm a bit of a conspiracy theorist, or is there some big rich developers at work
who said they can delay? Well, is your intent in raising the questions, Bill, that you find a way to make it work? There was an expectation that you said existed and exists still, and is there their turn away at the moment, something you perceive as permanent or correctable? You're looking for a correction, right?
We're looking for a solution. We're looking for them to change their mind. We're looking for them to use some of those resources that the governor committed to affordable housing to put it in the Upper Harbor development. That puts it very simple. And they need to tell us why we don't deserve it when they have not invested in North Minneapolis very often. They have not invested in North Minneapolis. They should want to make this a destination point for the whole region. There's going to be a nice regional park that's starting development right adjacent to these 47 acres of development. And as we spoke about, the amphitheater or the performance center. These are things that will draw crowds and revenue. There's a revenue sharing part of this project with the community on the ticket prices from the amphitheater. Mm-hmm. In addition to some of the lease, some part of the lease may be given to the community. I don't know, that's a city council decision. But the lease payment's also an opportunity. Moreover, there's an opportunity for minority-owned businesses, women-owned businesses, and other investors to come here and build your businesses around this wonderful site on the river with a wonderful view of downtown Annapolis.
Bill, we got to leave it there. I'm going to have James Trice close the segment out. James, make the invitation again. Let people know where and when and what they have to do.
All right. Next Tuesday, March 26th, 5:30 to 7:30 at Your Rock Urban Research and Engagement Center, 2001 Plymouth Avenue, North. 5:30 to 7:30, come, which are ready to hear what the developer has to say and make your comment. I'm going to have an opportunity for you to give, ask questions and make suggestions and that kind of thing. And just for context sake, for people to know what the Upper Harbor development is along the Mississippi River in North Minneapolis between 33rd Avenue and 40th Avenue. It's between Lowry and Camden Bridges. And if you're going west on 94 and you about to cross Dowling Avenue, look to your right and you'll see where the site is. It's a mile of riverfront, and a portion of the site is located around the intersection of Dowling Avenue and Washington Avenue, just for perspective. So next Tuesday, and go online and register as well at City of Minneapolis, minneapolismn.gov.
James Trice, thank you so much. Brandon Champo, Hillary Holmes, and Bill English, thank you also very much. And thank you, hopefully you come back again even next Tuesday for a minute to keep reminding people to show up. It's an important meeting. I'm Al McFarland. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland. As I promised, a robust conversation. I have two more guests for the rest of the program. One making an announcement, but then that leads to a consideration of music in our community and in our culture. I'm going to name them both and bring one in first and then the second and last guest. My friend Alfred Babington Johnson is here. And Alfred, you have in the current edition of Inside News an announcement of Minnesota Soul. What's that all about?
How are you, Al?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing nicely, and it always encouraged by your impact on our community to bring us the good information and the accurate information and the important conversation. So thank you very much. The Insight News is currently carrying a save the date announcement. The date to be saved is May 25th. And the event that will be occurring then is what we call Minnesota Soul. It's an event that will be being held at U.S. Bank Stadium. And it is, Al, it's a recognition of the fact that notwithstanding people don't think there's anything African-American or of import other than Kirby Puckett and Prince in Minnesota, we, having lived here, know that not only did they make great contributions, but we have such a multiplicity of talent and artists and what I call griot. Griot is a term I'm adopting. It's an African term that often deals with the storyteller, the one that carries the narrative for it, the Mahmoud El-Khatiz, if you will. Mm-hmm. But we're saying our narrative is big, and every person in our community is a griot. You have a story. Mm-hmm. And the story we want to reveal on May 25th at U.S. Bank Stadium is the artistic nature and the contribution, the imagination, the uplift that's available from African-American talent in music and drama and in arts of various kinds. That's what's going to be happening, Al, at U.S. Bank Stadium. And we are going to inundate this community with the announcement of that celebratory event from here forward.
Okay. Well, we'll be bringing guests on to talk about it as we go. Hang around. I want you to meet Michael Caine. Michael Caine is a pianist and keyboardist. He has had a prolific recording career, appearing on albums for labels such as Blue Note, Warner Brothers, Universal, ECM. He's worked with some of the most significant names in jazz and contemporary music, including the great Jack DeJohnette, fabulous Robbie Coltrane. Listen to him this morning on the radio. Terrence Blanchard, Pat Metheny, Charles Neville, Bobby McFerrin, and Michelle Ndolgi-Cello. He's worked with Michelle. His work with her has earned 2 Grammy nominations as a pianist, keyboardist, and arranger. His other projects include music for the films Maybe and Real With Me by director Carl Ford and Black Nexus Films. He also served as a pianist and musical director for the Jose Limon Dance Company's New York premiere of Crossroads. It's a collaboration between the composer James Newton and choreographer Donald McKay. Additionally, Kane has composed the music for the Broadway play View from 151st Street, which ran at the George Papp Public Theater in New York. He's an educator. He's held positions as a professor at Eastman School of Music, the New England Conservatory of Music, and Brandon University, currently director of the Electronic Music and Recording Arts Program at the McPhail Center for Music here in downtown Minneapolis, Minnesota. He's co-founder and CEO of Equay, a mobile-based multicultural digital music creation app that aims to redefine diversity, equity, and access to music creation and education. What a major challenge and investment, I think, of energy and genius. Brother Michael Kane, welcome to the conversation. Jump right in and talk about Equay, if you would.
Thanks so much. I'm amazed you got through all that. Well, thrilled to be here and appreciate the conversation. Equay is a music app, and maybe I'll talk a little bit about its origin stories. Which there's two. One is about 4 years old, and one's about 30 years old. But the 30-year-old version is when I was living in New York and working and doing a lot of touring and a lot of teaching, I got very interested in providing music access to communities that were not getting those opportunities. And through a friend of mine who was a former record label person, we started a program in New Jersey called the Digital Playground. And what we did is we got 5 Casio keyboards. We bought at our local Radio Shack, put it in a classroom, opened the doors after school and said, come on through and make music. And that first day, we had about 25 kids from the community came and hang out all day and did not want to go home. And it was some of the most beautiful music I ever heard. Folks tapping on keyboards, exploring. And it changed my life in terms of thinking about how powerful it is when you allow a young person to not just engage with music, but you really allow them to create their own music, the music that they want to make. And that's what we started to build about 25 years ago. So no matter what I was doing as a touring musician or as a teaching musician, I always kept that work going. So about 4 years ago, my wife and I have been, she returned, she grew up in the Twin Cities. We returned here about 5-6 years ago from New York. I started thinking about a digital version of this and thinking about how do we meet young folks where they are? And now we walk around with these little things called studios in our pockets, you know, that are hard to believe. And I started thinking about all the music that our young folks have access to. You know, we've never had more access to music in our lives. You can go on YouTube and hear literally thousands of songs an hour if you choose. But I call those like disembodied sounds. They're sounds, they're loops, they're samples from the internet. So what Equay really is, we went and we recorded, we gathered 50 musicians from around the world, playing instruments from around the world. We recorded 150 instruments from Africa, the Middle East, Asia, North America, South America. And we sampled those, we turned those into MIDI instruments. So young people can, or any user, any creator, can explore instruments from around the world. You can see what they look like. You can read some cultural context. If it's a djembe from West Africa, you can read about how it's made, how it's used, what its cultural orientation is. And but the kicker is you can make your own music with those instruments. So that's kind of been my mission, is to really facilitate music creation. So now what we have is we have young folks, we have teachers using Ekwe to teach world music. We have it to teach composition and improvisation. One of our partners is the ALS Association. Folks that are living with ALS are using Ekwe to engage with music. Wow. That have disability issues. One of our participants in that program was a former classical pianist that essentially lost the use of her hands and lost her ability to compose. And now she spends those couple of hours a day playing the piano, composing on Ekwe. So there's been a wide use, a range of uses for the app.
That's amazing. Talk about, if you would, how do people get the app, number one, and what's your plan for getting it into the marketplace, into use?
Right. It's available on iOS, so Apple and Android and Chromebooks. So you can go to the App Store and buy it. It's an annual subscription of $19.95 a year.
So what kind of person should be acquiring this for his or her personal use?
Who's you can the typical do it that
purchaser?
Way.
I'm asking.
That's right. A typical purchaser would be, our users range from ages of 6 and 7, and we've seen folks, one user I know was 87.
Okay. I'm going to pivot real quickly. Concert for Peace, what's that?
Concert for Peace is, as you mentioned, I'm also a director of the Electronic Music and Recording Arts Program at McPhail, and one of our contributing artists is a hand percussionist and frame drummer, Yusuf Sharonik, based in New York. So we're bringing Yusuf to Minneapolis, and he's going to do some teaching at McPhail. And once we organize that concert, or organize his visit, we said, let's build a concert around his visit. So I gathered my a bunch of musicians that I wanted to work with, including J.D. Steele, who wasn't able to be here today, the great, great, great J.D. Yep. Steele, and others. And we're writing a lot of original music that's going to feature the frame drum. The thing I'd say about the frame drum is it's the oldest instrument on the planet. It's about 3,000 years old, and it's ubiquitous to all cultures. It exists in Africa, the Middle East, South America. Everywhere has some form of the frame drum. So our thinking was, you know, that's an instrument that is probably the most unifying instrument on the planet. And the thing about music is it's foundational to being a human being. It transcends political orientation, religious beliefs. It transcends language. So we decided to build a concert that's really focused on that.
When will the concert be?
Saturday, March 23rd at McPhail and Antonello Hall. It's a free concert. Just show up, grab a seat, or stand and dance. You know, I would describe the music as Afrobeat, jazz, soul, R&B, feel-good music.
Let me, in our last 30 seconds, have you say hello to my friend Alfred Babington Johnson. If you guys don't know each other already, you should.
Absolutely.
Because you're working with the same spirit. That's what I believe.
That's a pleasure.
Yes, and nice to meet you. And I hope somehow we could get Ekwe into this event on May 25th that we're going to have at U.S. Bank. Hopefully we'll
have absolutely. Let's connect on it. Happy to do it.
There we go. And with that, gentlemen, we're out of time. Babington, always good to see you. Thank you for all that you do in community. Brother Michael Caine, so good to meet you.
Likewise. Thank you.
You're welcome here anytime. And
thank
use
so
this
much.
Platform to both reach and connect and build the relationships that we need to move our people forward.
Thank you.
I'm Alan McFarland. We'll see you next time. Take care.
Thing I'm most excited about is using art to help change the narrative of who belongs in this community.
This is Art Changes, stories on how creativity can change your community.
My name is Stephanie Rogers, and I am the executive and artistic director of the Anderson Center at Tower View in Red Wing, Minnesota. We're in a community that has thought of itself as mostly white. But African Americans have made their home in Red Wing for more than 150 years. The Anderson Center is working with Say Two Jones on public art installations that will identify sites of significant African American history within our community. Shadows of people etched into public sidewalk with poetic text describing their lives, and then there will be a sign or plaque nearby telling more of the history. Artists are uniquely equipped with problems